2019 was a big year for environmental advocates in New York with the passage of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which set ambitious climate change goals for the state. Since then, New York policymakers have begun implementing provisions of the law, including establishing a Climate Action Council and enacting various state regulations. In light of these developments and the start of the new legislative session in Albany, we wanted to check in on this progress with Ann Reynolds, who has served as the executive director of the Alliance for Clean Energy New York since 2014 and is one of the Senate Democratic appointees to the Climate Action Council. So since you were appointed last January to the Climate Action Council, it's held multiple meetings and broken into various working groups, and there's now less than a year before the council is due to produce a draft plan to achieve the state's future mission goals. So how would you describe the status of this effort right now?
Right, approaching quickly. I think things are going along well. We had just one meeting in person before the world closed down because of COVID, and so there was kind of a slow start. But certainly in the second half of the year, it really picked up speed, and there were getting to the point where it was difficult to cover all of the meetings they had. We designated folks to be on each of the technical advisory panels, and those technical advisory panels started meeting. Many of them broke into subgroups, and so there was numerous meetings and activities going on. Most all of it, as far as I know, online and open to the public, which is good news. I think we made good progress, and I think we can get a draft scoping plan together by the end of the year, for sure.
In December, Politico New York's ace environmental reporter Marie French noted on Twitter that the state has been crafting climate action plans in some shape or form for the last two decades. Is any of that previous work being utilized right now, or do you feel like this council is trying to reinvent the wheel with this process?
Yeah, I would say it is, but maybe indirectly. So I hadn't seen that report from Marie, but she's absolutely right. I participated in Governor Pataki's climate action planning exercise, and then there was another one under Governors Spitzer and Patterson that I participated in when I was working for the state. So I've been on both sides of it. And so there's a lot of institutional knowledge, and there's also things that were recommended in those plans that have come to pass. Like the best example is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, REGI. And so that was one of the recommendations of the very first effort, and, you know, it's been in operation for years now. So it's not like we are taking those old plans, dusting them off, and rewriting them, but a lot of the ideas and the knowledge about them have carried forth into this one for sure.
Have any decisions been made at this point by the council? By that, I mean, are there any areas where you feel like, you know, they've reached a consensus and you can, like, move on because that portion is, you know, is ready to write the draft report on already?
Nope. I wish I could say yes, but, I mean, we really haven't. I mean, most of what we've accomplished is empaneling all those technical advisory panels, and they're the ones talking through the ideas of what will go in each sector's report. So they're collecting information from the public, and many of them are having public meetings where people can speak in January, or maybe some of them will spill over into February. But I wouldn't say we've made any decisions yet, other than, you know, structural. Like the group really felt that waste issues were sort of given less attention and decided to create a new panel to talk just about waste emissions from waste activities. But no decisions yet as to here's what the state should do or here's what they shouldn't do.
Do you feel like there should be consensus already on some of these topics, considering the environmental community already has probably some firm opinions on a lot of these issues?
Well, there's lots of things that I think that New York should do, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's inappropriate that the panel hasn't come to any decisions itself on these topics. The parts of the law that are more specific, not the planning exercise, but the numerical goals for, say, 70% renewable electricity or 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind, the state is on a parallel track moving ahead with making progress towards those. If that wasn't happen, then I'd say, oh, for sure, they should be moving ahead on these things that we know need to happen because they were explicitly stated in the law. But they are moving ahead on those things. And then the other effort is this plan. I would be concerned if there were lots of examples where the state were saying, no, we're not going to do this, or no, we're not going to do that until the plan is done. Because I don't think that we should wait for this plan to be done at the end of 2022 before we continue to take action. But so far, that hasn't mostly has not happened.
What's been the biggest surprise, either for good or bad, about serving on this council?
Well, I don't think there's been any major surprises. I think the fact that the entire process moved online has been the biggest surprise. But of course, that's because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It has had the unintended consequence of making it more accessible to the public, I think, because the general public doesn't really have time to travel to Albany for an in-person meeting every month, or as it has turned out to be several times per month. But because it's all online, now everyone can listen in. So I think, you know, that's the silver lining in a terrible year.
We're talking about environmental and energy policy in New York, and our guest is Anne Reynolds, who served as the executive director of the Alliance for Clean Energy in New York since 2014, and is one of the Senate Democratic appointees to the Climate Action Council, which is responsible for crafting a plan to drastically reduce the state's carbon footprint. During a couple of the meetings of the council in the fall, you brought up the issue of renewable natural gas. For the listener, can you explain what constitutes renewable natural gas?
Well, different people have different definitions of what they mean. Most of the time, people mean like if you have methane that's created from composting food waste, if you have methane emitted from landfills or from sewage treatment plants. And so it's methane is natural gas, but it's generated from those activities that I mentioned. So if you use that, for example, to create electricity, right, in turbines, you're not taking natural gas that you've drilled for. You're using natural gas that was created by these other activities.
You sound a little, I guess, skeptical of that expression, renewable natural gas. Is this something that you think fits into the state's long-term energy plans?
Well, I think it should. I know there's some differences of opinion. I think if you already have landfills, sewage treatment plants, or say food composting that's generating methane, then you might as well use that methane for either generating electricity or powering vehicles. I actually think it's going to be a relatively small part of the solution for New York because it's as you might imagine, it's a limited quantity. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't use it. We should use it, but we shouldn't really count on it for the energy transition that we need.
What's prompted you to bring up this issue on multiple occasions?
Well, I think there definitely is some debate. There has been some debate at the meeting about what the role of biogas or bioenergy should be. And I think I was responding to that debate that was brought up at the meeting. It's one of those things that wasn't, in my mind, isn't abundantly clear in the statute. But it also is a small, as I say, a small part of what we need to be doing. It has, in my view, taken up an outsized portion of the discussion time because it was unclear in the law when really, you know, it's going to be wind, solar, batteries, and new transmission that get us, I think, most of the way towards the solutions we need. But I think it's come up because it's a little bit ambiguous in the law.
Well, then I will move on and we will not spend any more time on this. The state currently has a mid-year deficit in the billions of dollars and is projected to have a multi-billion dollar deficit for the upcoming fiscal year, which starts in April. Could this have ramifications for the Climate Action Council? Does your work rely on state investments?
It definitely could have ramifications. I think it's going to have ramifications on everything the state does for the next number of years. A lot of what the state does is funded through ratepayers. So the renewable electricity programs are generally funded through ratepayers. The energy efficiency programs are generally funded through ratepayers. I think where it's going to have the most impact is if the council comes up with lots of new great ideas that everyone agrees on, many of them are going to cost money. And it's going to really, I think, put the damper on engaging in new taxpayer-funded initiatives because that money is going to be in short supply.
The Climate Action Council is made up of appointees from the legislature as well as representatives from the Cuomo administration. Moving forward, where do you see the power lying in terms of the decision-making of this council? Is this something where you feel like, you know, just democracy is going to rule the council and its decision-making? Or is the deck sort of stacked in the governor's favor based on the appointment breakdown?
Well, I think both of those last two things can be true.
Because
I think it probably will go by majority rules, but the majority of the appointments have been made by the governor, and that's the way the law was structured. I think it's going to come down to myself, hopefully, right, the emergence of the best ideas. But there's no question that the state itself is going to have a lot of weight in the process because they have the agencies offering and providing all the technical support that we need. And that's the way it has to be. That's the way it should be. We can't be making these decisions just based on a batch of opinions. We have to make the decisions on analysis of what will work, what will actually get us emissions, what will create jobs, what will cost more or less. So the state agencies are providing all that data and information. So, you know, they're going to have a lot of control of the process in that way. But I actually think, maybe I'm naive, I think that the great majority of the answers, if you will, the solutions will be clear and obvious, and there won't be a lot of objections to them. So probably will be, you know, maybe 15 or 20% of the emissions reductions will be technologies that are controversial or haven't been invented yet, maybe. But the large share of what we need to do is known already, and it comes down to building wind, solar, batteries, and transmission.
And after a quick break, we'll talk with Alliance for Clean Energy New York Executive Director Ann Reynolds about her 2021 priorities and a regional cap and trade program that Governor Andrew Cuomo opted not to join.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our conversation with Ann Reynolds, Executive Director of the Alliance for Clean Energy New York. In December, the governors of Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island signed on to a regional cap and trade plan that is designed to reduce transportation emissions by 26% by 2032. Governor Andrew Cuomo did not sign on to this plan. What exactly is New York essentially opting out of? And do you think it's a mistake?
Yeah, well, I was very disappointed that the governor didn't sign on at this time. And, you know, my fingers are crossed that it's something that could still happen in the future. What the program is called the Transportation Climate Initiative. It's a bunch of states in the region getting together, creating a cap on emissions from the transportation sector, and then requiring those who sell wholesale transportation fuels to purchase allowances for selling them. So if there was a wholesaler of transportation fuel in New York State and they were selling a certain amount of fuel, they would have to buy a certain amount of allowances to cover what they were selling. And then over time, those allowances would be ratcheted down, and that's how emissions would be reduced. But the most important part of the program, in my mind, is that the revenues from selling those allowances would then be reinvested back into clean transportation. So it could be electric transit buses or electric school buses. It could be charging infrastructure, or it could be pedestrian or bicycle infrastructure. And it circles back to what I said before. We can come up with a long list of wonderful ideas that wouldn't just reduce pollution from transportation, but would help people move around, would address traffic issues or mobility issues in low-income neighborhoods. But if we don't have the money to pay for that stuff, then it's just a list of good ideas. And the Transportation Climate Initiative is a way to generate that revenue. So you'd have a dedicated revenue source to pay for these things. So for me, it was a disappointment that New York chose not to sign on at this time, but I'm hoping that it's more of a sign that they weren't ready and not a sign that they're opposed.
For the states that did sign on, what's it going to mean for people who just want to, you know, go about their daily life, driving, you know, for work, driving for pleasure? Is it going to become more expensive? Are there going to be limitations on their ability to, say, use their car or truck?
Right. The way it would be implemented, as I said, is the wholesalers would have to buy those allowances, and they would pass that cost on in the price of gas, for example. But I would circle back to something I said before. Those same states, a similar list, participates in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which New York has for over 10 years. It works just the same way. And so a small portion of what you pay for electricity pays for that RGGI allowances, and that money is recycled back into clean electricity programs. So it could be that gas prices would increase somewhat, but the analysis shows that it's less than the normal fluctuation in gas prices over time. So it would be designed to be relatively painless for people. I'm not saying it would be zero, but the money would create, as I said, that revenue stream to pay for good things. But there would not be any limitations on how much you could drive, is the other part of your question.
If the state doesn't ultimately choose to take this sort of regional approach with regards to transportation emissions and this cap and trade plan, is it possible that this could be something that would fall under the purview of the Climate Action Council and we could, you know, go our own way with our own New York specific plan?
Yeah, for sure. We could do it that way too. And the transportation advisory panel of the council should take this up. There is another legislative proposal called the Clean Fuel Standard that would do a somewhat similar but different approach at the state level. So it would require a carbon intensity standard for all fuels used in the state. And if some fuels didn't meet that standard, they would have to buy credits from fuels that did. So it would be another way to help steer investment towards electric vehicle infrastructure, for example, and it's an approach that California has had for 9 years. So that's something else that New York could do. My own opinion is that they should do both, that they would complement each other well, but it's not the only way to tackle transportation.
Under that legislative initiative you just outlined, what types of fuels would require the need to purchase those credits and likely become more expensive? You know, the regular gasoline that I get at the pump, would that likely become more expensive?
That would definitely be subject to the standards. So the state would establish a carbon intensity standard, and it could be, for example, probably all fossil fuels would have to do something to meet that standard.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have to, as I said, either invest in electric infrastructure themselves or buy credits from companies that do. But it would affect the cost of probably all fossil fuels, cleaner ones less and more carbon-intensive ones more.
On Wednesday, we're going to have the start of the legislative session. Aside from this bill that we just talked about, do you have any other legislative priorities for 2021, either as standalone bills or something you're hoping to get tucked into the state budget?
Yeah, we definitely do. We always do. On the renewable energy side, we had a huge victory last year, the Accelerated Renewable Energy Growth Act. One of the items that fell out of negotiations was trying to find a standard assessment for wind and solar facilities.
What does that mean?
All around the state, you know, if you have a wind or solar facility, you get assessed property taxes. But since wind and solar facilities are so different from a home or a building or business, people don't know what to tax them. And we think it would be helpful if the state agency, New York Tax and Finance, would publish a methodology for assessing wind and solar. Our other legislative priority is electric vehicles. We really think that there should be some smaller measures passed to tackle electric vehicles in terms of really making it easier for those businesses to thrive in New York. And so one example is direct sales. As you might know, a car company cannot sell a car directly to you in New York State, and the electric car companies would like to be able to do that. So we're going to support legislation that would allow for direct sales of electric vehicles from the manufacturer.
How would that work in practice? Essentially, I can just buy my Tesla from the Tesla factory, or do I just no longer have an opportunity to go to a dealership and try out the car?
The idea would allow Tesla to have stores in New York.
Gotcha.
So right now, Tesla has 5, I believe, but it's limited, and that was sort of a special dispensation. But they can't open up any more stores in New York. So if you want to buy a Tesla, you can't go to a store and try it out. You maybe have to go to Ohio or New Jersey or somewhere else.
That's convenient.
Yeah. And we're losing out on that sales tax revenue in New York State in that case. So you could still go to a dealer if you wanted to buy, you know, any other type of vehicle. But if you wanted to buy an all-electric vehicle from a company that only sells electric vehicles, they would be able to open up stores like Tesla or Rivian, for example, is another company. And we're also hoping to support a bill that would give school districts additional state money if they choose to buy or lease electric school buses instead of diesel school buses. So we know that it's an initial expense for them to make that transition, and so it would make it easier to do that.
And with the car dealership proposal, is the idea there that by, I guess, cutting out a middleman, the cars themselves would become cheaper than, say, they would be with that extra layer involved?
That's part of it, yeah. I think another part of it, though, is the these companies, their business model is to sell cars directly. And so they're doing that in other states. They're not allowed to do it in New York. So we think it's one of the barriers to more people buying electric vehicles in New York.
What kind of vehicle are you driving?
I drive a Prius plug-in, and when I can get my son to clean out the garage so I can plug in the car, it's charged electrically.
So you're walking the walk and talking the talk, Ben.
Trying to.
Well, we've been speaking with Ann Reynolds. She is the executive director of the Alliance for Clean Energy New York and one of the Senate Democratic appointees to the Climate Action Council. Ann, thank you so much for making the time, and good luck charging the Prius.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.